is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Let's get into it. A Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line coming at you, presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. Set the table for today. A pair of outstanding game ones in the NBA Conference Finals back-to-back days. The NHL postseason continues to roll on. We'll have picks and predictions from VSiN's own Mike Somich, who will join us later on this hour. And as NFL OTAs continue to roll on, the one and only Mike Palm is going to join us for the final 30 minutes of the show. Talk all things Lovely. Circa Survivor and Circa Millions contest. Michael, they had the reveal this morning on Follow the Money. Mike Palm and Derek Stevens, owner of Circa Resort and Casino, here where I am broadcasting from today. The guarantee is out, $10 million for Circa Survivor, and you know that many more people are going to be signing up this year.
Look, let me say this. First of all, happy beginning of Memorial Day weekend. As you don't realize this, but when you live on the East Coast and you know, Memorial Day weekend's a big weekend to honor those who served. And we have parades and hot dogs and hamburgers. But it's also the beginning of technically the summer for a lot of these beach communities. So we go from being not very crowded to trying to find a hard place to park. So it is the beginning of summer here. As Don Henley says in his song, The Boys of Summer, the sun won't go down alone any longer because it's going to be here. All of them are here to celebrate with us. So that starts us off. And then, you know, it's going to take all of, what was it, $10 million you said on the guarantee?
Yep.
Like, to me, I was talking to a professional bettor yesterday who stopped by my office, and we were talking about how hard Survivor is. And, like, it should be a reward like that because I don't know how you navigate that terrain. I mean, there's bombs everywhere. And what looks the easiest in Survivor, and I know Adam Burke did a great job of laying it out on the website in terms of giving you some strategy, but no matter what that strategy is, it's hard. The only thing I keep thinking of, Stormy, is you just get through week one. That's all I think about in that tournament is just make it to week two. I've seen so many people get blown up in week one with a lock bet that I just say to myself, if you can just get to week two, you might have a chance.
I've had it happen in week one. Brent Musburger's had it happen in week one. Like, so many of us have had it happen, and we think we know what we're talking about. Nobody knows what they're talking about, it feels like, when it comes to this. But listen to Adam Burke, because he and his partner got all the way through week 16 last year, and it does. It takes a lot of prep. It takes a lot of studying. It takes a lot of luck as well. And, you know, whoever ends up being the last one standing there at the end, it's life-changing for some people out there, which is what makes it so dang fun. The farthest I've gotten so far is to week 10, and I will never let it go how upset and brutal it was, Michael, still, that I had the Pittsburgh Steelers Detroit Lions tie during the COVID season when we didn't know that Big Ben wasn't going to be available for that game, and that one still eats away at me. But neither here nor there. We'll talk plenty of Survivor later on in the show. It's going to be fun. We got to start in the NBA because In a postseason that I feel has been defined so much by blowouts, these first games in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals have been down to the wire. They have been fun, exciting. Last night, nobody led or trailed by double digits at all. It was tightly contested. You liked the Mavs, and they come out on top, winning 108-105 as a 4.5-point dog, Michael.
And look, let me just be clear. I like the Mavs. I'm a Mavs fan. I think they're undervalued. I think it's insulting that they're now the line is the second game. I think everybody, the line is always predicated on people believing there's going to be a bounce back, that you can't win two games in a row on somebody else's court. But here's what I will say about that game. And if you watch it closely, Dallas didn't play well. I mean, they take 25 three-pointers, which is way below their minimum. They only make six of them. Three of them came from Luka. They had a lot of open looks and didn't hit them very well. Luka didn't play great until the fourth quarter, which he was outstanding. Kyrie was, oh my God. I asked Femi on the podcast today if he could do any of those left-handed shots that Kyrie was doing. It was just amazing, right? I mean, he carried the team and, you know, and all the things that I've said about Kyrie in terms of dealing with them off the court. It's changed with Jason Kidd, and credit the Mavericks organization for getting him to be the kind of great player that we all didn't appreciate when he was going on a different tangent. So, look, I think the other thing that's pretty clear, when the Timberwolves play small like they did last night, when they don't get points in the paint, they're not the same team. And I was really surprised, Stormy, of how tired Anthony Edwards looked during the game. He was exhausted. But I think when you watch this, right, you realize that he's forced to play on both ends of the court now. He can't kind of loaf a little bit on defense. Like, he's got to match up, and they're good. I think Dallas is really good. Dallas believes that they have two players that the Timberwolves cannot cover. And I would happen to agree with that.
Yeah, and the two stars stepped up, as you referenced there. Kyrie had 24 of his 30 in the first half, so he comes out slinging. And then Luka closes you out strong with 15 of his 33 coming in the fourth quarter. And I know that the three wasn't there, but the paint points were. And that disparity was massive. 62 points in the paint against the number one defense in the NBA and the defensive player of the year occupying that space for much of the game. But it all started with Kyrie Irving, and I feel like I keep going back to this, the career renaissance that this guy is having. And you think about even last year when he gets traded to Dallas and it doesn't feel like it's working out. It's not gelling. We had all that offseason fodder about, well, you know, maybe he's just going to force his way out again and go to LA and try to play with LeBron and the Lakers. Credit him and this team for them buying in the belief that they have, and they've come together and they've worked at it and they've been awesome. But because, Michael, you mentioned Anthony Edwards being tired, let's hear from him after the game because he admitted as much.
We came out flat today. I mean, and then we found our energy, then we went back to being flat. So I think it was just on us. Everything was on us today. I didn't get downhill as much. Just stuff like that. We was just a little tired probably.
And he was settling for threes all night, it looked like, shooting 6-for-16 during the game. He was chasing Kyrie all over the place. But as a team, Mike Connolly, 2-of-7, Kat, 6-of-20, it seemed like a lot of them just didn't have their legs under them in this one.
Yeah, and they also seemed like a team that thought they won the Western Conference Championship because they beat Denver. Mm. Now, let's not rule that out, right? I think, and they felt like they were in control of that game because Dallas really wasn't playing well. You know, and give Dallas credit. I think they were up by 8 late, and then the Timberwolves come storming back in the fourth quarter to tie it and then take the lead, and PJ hits that key 3 in the corner. But to me, this is going to be a hard series for Minnesota because the Mavericks understand how to attack the way they play defense. Minnesota plays defense the same way that Utah played defense with Rudy Gobert. They're in that drop area. And they're the only team, Dallas being, if you watch the season, Dallas had a hard time defending Dallas during the season. Now, Dallas defense early in the year wasn't good enough, so the scores are deceiving. But this is going to be a problem, and they'll shift. Do they play some zone in the next game? I think that's going to be the chess match that goes on. I've said this before. Dallas is really good at adjusting. Now, what Dallas has to do is adjust to what they suspect the adjustment from the Timberwolves is going to be. And they're going to have to make some, right? They're going to have to make some adjustments. They're going to have to keep Edwards fresher on defense because if he's got to play at this level, he's not the same offensive player because he's exhausted. So I thought it was a great series. The crowd was into it. But there is a little bit of an element when you beat a champion, you kind of stick your chest out and say, wait a minute, we're the champions now. No, you're not. You still got a lot more work to do.
That's very well said. And I think because of that, I don't want to overreact to the result that we saw last night because, like, the Timberwolves, to your point, they're coming off of a win that is probably, like, their biggest in franchise history. It's a Game 7 on the road against the defending champs. Coming off of that, I can understand not only being physically drained, but the mental drain that comes with that. So for as exciting as it is that the Mavericks got this win, I don't think that just because Minnesota lost this game that we should be counting them out. And they are a team that took money to be like what it went from minus 140 at open in the series to minus 190, evened out at minus 170. We've seen a full flip in the series now. And I wonder if that's just a little bit of an over adjustment and if it could be worthwhile to buy in on the Timberwolves at plus 140. Or if you are just saying what we saw from Dallas, if that wasn't even their A game, they're just going to continue to get better. It's a really interesting conversation, I think, which way you view this set going.
Yeah, and to me, though, I think what we've never given enough credit to, really, in all honesty, is enough. They have two elite players. I mean, elite, elite, elite players in Luka and Kyrie. And, you know, we always talk about star power, right? The Knicks, they had Brunson, and then they had guys that played roles. This team has two elite players and other role players. And look, they got 20 points against Minnesota in the paint with dunks.
Yeah. No, it's the paint was significant. Also, tonight we have a team in the Indiana Pacers who are kicking themselves that they couldn't do what Dallas did last night. So we'll preview that game at a length a little bit later. Boston, they were a 10-point favorite. They ultimately, obviously, did not cover, nearly lost the game straight up, but forced overtime. They're a 9-point favorite tonight. The total has been bet up a little bit to 224.5. I'm surprised, though, that it's not higher, considering that game one was tied at 117 in regulation. Michael, do you think that we continue to see over money in this game?
Well, I think the reaction to the reason it hasn't ticked up enough is I'm sure that everybody is saying to themselves that, look, this is one of the Boston's one of the best defensive teams in the league, and they're not going to let their opponent shoot 53% from the floor again, right? I think that's the conversation. And so they feel like it's going to revert to the mean, because everything about the NBA comes back to statistics, right? You know, if you don't shoot well in one game, eventually you'll shoot better in the next game. And who could have predicted that the Pacers are shooting 63% or 64% in one game, and then the next quarter they shoot another 65%. I mean, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, very hard to keep up that type of pace. Again, the Celtics lay in 9 tonight, total 224.5. Game 2 tomorrow in the Western Conference Final. The Timberwolves bet up from 4 to 5.5-point home favorites in Game 2, total 207.5. We're going to take a break. When we come back, time for GM Translator. Dak Prescott told reporters yesterday he doesn't care and has never cared about money. He's selling. Are we buying? That and more coming up.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the betting tools and content available at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN senior NBA analyst JVT has previews, picks, and predictions up for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We've got daily write-ups in the NHL, Major League Baseball, WNBA, and, of course, plenty of off-season NFL content. This week, Michael Lombardi's column covers the interim coach dilemma, breaking down why interim coaches tend to struggle after transitioning to the full-time head coaching gig, and how to approach Antonio Pierce and the Raiders in the betting market. Check it all out today at VSiN.com alongside Mr. Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. So welcome you all back to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network. Time for another edition of GM Translator. Uh-oh. Yes, we need the breakdown. Put the GM hat back on. We need the breakdown as we listen to all of these quarterbacks and coaches talking about contracts right now. Let's start with Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott, who expressed calm patience on Wednesday as it pertains to his contract. Take a listen.
I don't play for money. Never have, never cared for it, to be honest with you. Yeah, would give it up to play this game. So business is business. I'll leave it where it gets handled. Right now it's about being my best for this team right now in this moment. OTA's helping these guys out and just focused on that. So I allow that to the business people to say what it's worth, what they're supposed to give a quarterback of my play, a person of my play, leader of my play, I guess you can say. And for me, it's about, as I said, control I can control and handle that part, and the rest will take care of itself.
Michael, silly us. He doesn't care about money. He never has. He never will.
Well, I think it's kind of, I think he said it really poorly. What he really is saying there is my agents are going to handle the business. I have stats. I have value. I have worth relative to everybody else in the league. It's their job to make them aware of it and to get a contract that's commensurate to that status within the league based on what I've done. Nothing wrong with what that. To me, when he says he doesn't play for a contract or money, that's not true, because later in the conversation, he understands worth and respect, and that can only come from money, right? You know, I mean, Jerry will pat you on the back a lot if that's all you want. I mean, I promise you, Jerry will do that, but this is going to come with some money. So I think he said the right thing as a leader. I think everybody's going to take the interpretation that I don't play for money as the golden goose in the conversation, when yet in reality is he's letting his agents handle that part. He's going to focus on the football part.
And he's gone through and bet on himself and gotten paid in the past. That's why he's entering the final season of what was a four-year, $160 million deal that he signed in 2021. Dak is a three-time Pro Bowler. He was an MVP finalist this past year, led the league in passing touchdowns with 36, just nine interceptions. So, yeah, Dak knows what he's capable of. And I just think it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together on the field this year with, you know, Mike McCarthy on kind of a lame duck coaching contract, all of those coaches deals that are up. How are things going to work with CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons? And there are a lot of question marks, I think, with Dallas, despite coming off three straight 12-win seasons. They don't have anything to show for it in the postseason.
Well, let's add one more layer to it while you mention that, Stormy. Let's just hypothetically say that Trey Lance is good this summer. Now, I'm not thinking that that can be true. I'm not sold that he can be good. He's in his last year of his deal. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option. But let's just hypothetically say he is good. And let's hypothetically say that Jerry has decided that, yes, I'd like Dak back, but I can't keep paying this ridiculous price because I'm going to pay Lamb and I'm going to play Parsons. And I've got a young quarterback who has promise. Solves a lot of issues. Now you say, well, you have to get Lance under contract. Well, that shouldn't be too hard. I mean, that's going to be a short-term deal that he can grow into, not a long-term deal like Dak. So, you know, let's just hypothetically play that out and say Lance is really good this summer. And again, I know it's preseason and guys have looked great, you know, in the summer. However, Jerry's, they're all making a point they want to look at him. And I think they are making the point that this is getting so expensive. Like Trevor Lawrence and Tua are going to get so expensive at some point. Is it worthwhile to do it? I mean, Trevor Lawrence to make over $50 million, there's no statistical data to support that he should make that. There's none. You're betting on the come. You're betting. It's a speculation contract. Tua has at least some numbers, but there's limitations to Tua. He hasn't beaten any good team. And if you understand how to play the Miami Dolphins, and if they lose Tyreek Hill or Waddle at any point for an extended time, Tua comes back to the pack, not jumps ahead of the pack. So you got to be really careful here.
Well, I will say if the Cowboys go down that road with Trey Lance, good luck. As a San Francisco 49ers fan, I can
say that firmly.
But I would agree,
but I'm just hypothetical. Sure. It was hypothetical. Don't yell at me.
No yelling, just, you know, stern tone of voice. With the Cowboys moving forward, again, we'll just have to keep tabs on how things play out for them this season and beyond. Another contract that you just referenced there, Tua Tagovailoa, his head coach, Mike McDaniels, was asked about Tua being present and not present during offseason workouts. Take a listen to this.
He has been here for off-season activities. He has not been here for off-season activities. He has been both. I think important in the player-coach relationship is communication. And I think however things play out, as long as we're communicating and we're on our P's and Q's and what we need to get accomplished, then we have a fighting chance. And it's been a good exercise in our relationship this offseason.
Before I get your reaction to that, actually go ahead since you're juiced up about it.
Well, I think it's pretty clear Tua hasn't been communicating with him. I mean, that's really clear to me. Like, you know, every coach wants to know either you're in or you're out. And for him to make the comment, yes, he's been here, and yes, he hasn't been here, and we got to do a better job of communicating, tells me that Tua's been not communicating with them, you know, because that whole tone, if Tua was communicating with them, here's the conversation. Yeah, Tua's here. Sometimes, you know, he tells me when he's not, he tells me when he needs to go back, but he's all in when he's here. He's been great. We have great conversations. We talk all the time. That wasn't the conversation. That conversation was clearly a message through the media to Tua that, you know, we have phones, we both text, we're both, you know, modern 2024 adults here that can use all the technology that's available to us. Use it. Let me know where you are. I'm not going to say you don't belong, you can't come. I'm not going to say you should come. I'm just going to want to know where you are. That's what was going on there. That was rather interesting.
I love that. And also, by the way, the Miami Dolphins this season, among the tougher schedules on paper, obviously we know the AFC East, but they also play the NFC West and AFC South. So 49ers, Rams, Seahawks, Texans, Jags, they've got another game at Cleveland on the schedule. Seventh on the odds board to win the AFC at 11-1. One quarterback whose contract situation we haven't discussed much, which I think does provide a little bit of intrigue, is the Packers' new young quarterback in Jordan Love. Here's him in yesterday's availability in the locker room.
Why did you feel it was important to be here?
Yeah, I mean, that's just something that I've always done, trying to be here, get the reps in, get the work in with the guys, and just start building that chemistry and getting ready for the season.
Do you have an idea of, like, when you would like that done? Has your agent said you're not stepping on the field for a preseason game until you have a deal done or something like that?
No. So I don't really know what's going on, but we'll see. But, yeah, I'm not going to get into too much contract stuff.
Would you be comfortable playing under the current deal, or is that something that you don't want to do at this point?
We'll see. I don't know yet, you know. We'll see.
Big Daddy's favorite phrase, we'll see, Michael. But
we'll see.
To Jordan Love and you see what he did on the field yesterday, has he done enough in one season as a starter to get paid as a top eight quarterback in the league?
No, nobody has. You know, everything is, you know, you're speculating. I mean, certainly he's done more than Trevor Lawrence, but you're speculating. And I don't mean to pick on Trevor Lawrence, yeah, but I have high hopes for Trevor Lawrence. And he hasn't done that. You know, this kid has, but it's been a limited. Remember, earlier in the season, you watch Green Bay tape. They're hiding Love. They're not showing Love. Late in the year, they were showing Love. And I think there's a huge difference when you watch them. But here's the reality. All those questions that those reporters are asking are meaningless because he has a contract. And, you know, unless he wants to go down the Chris Jones road of what, $50,000 a day fines that cannot be taken back unless you give it to him in incentives? Like, of course he's going to be there. Of course he's going to show up. The only players that have a legitimate chance to hold out without consequences are the ones like T. Higgins, who doesn't have a contract. Like, this whole idea, well, you know, we'll see if I'll show up. Of course you're going to show up. It's $50,000. You're not losing that money. You're going to show up. Right? Like, that's the dumbest questions of all time. Like, oh, will you play under your current deal? Yeah, I have to play under my current deal. They're going to take money away from me. And then it's not a very good deal. God, I don't get this. Nobody know the rules or what? You're asking these stupid questions and nobody knows the rules.
Well, I don't know, Michael. Dak Prescott just said he didn't care about money. See, I just had to throw that out there.
Yeah, well,
I know.
Thank you, Stormy. Thank you. There you go.
But every now and then. Okay, we've got to hit the break. That was fun. When we come back, VSiN's own Mike Somich will join the show. We'll get his thoughts on the NBA, NHL playoffs, and beyond. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champion, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Plus, if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, V-S-I-N. The crown is yours.
Oh, it's my favorite time of the week. Thursday's my Friday, but this is the best part of the week, right? I get to hear Stormy's take on so many different things, and Elliot does a great job. Let's start off a little close to home here, Stormy. You know, I know your husband, Chris, is a huge Carolina Panther fan, and I know there's a soft spot in your heart for the Panthers, probably low down there, but there is one. So I want you to tell me why you think Bryce Young isn't a bust.
And I'll put this with a little dot, 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 yet. I think it is far too soon and unfair to give him that label after one season, Michael. Did he struggle? Yes. Were the Panthers tied with the Giants for the least points per game in the league? Yes. But were there a hell of a lot more reasons than just Bryce Young sucks as to why the Panthers struggled? Yes, like look at that offensive line that allowed the second most sacks in the entire league last year. Quarterback sacked 65. Bryce Young took 62 of them. He was the most sacked number one pick since David Carr. He can make plays with his arm. He can extend plays with his legs, but you have to give him a chance. And this guy was beat to a pulp, yet still ended up starting more games than any other rookie quarterback in the NFL last year, despite all of the questions about his size and frame. They invested heavily in the offensive line this offseason, so I think right off the bat, that should be better. He was also crucified for his accuracy last year, but what if I told you, according to Next Gen Stats, that the Carolina Panthers receivers gained the least amount of separation than any other team in the league. So help him out there as well. He also went back and forth between Frank Reich and Thomas Brown calling plays. He saw his head coach fired after 12 weeks in the season. Let's also add into the equation that everything we see from Bryce Young is going to be under an even bigger magnifying glass because of the success, the historic success, mind you, that CJ Stroud had, because he went number two and Bryce Young went number one. I was looking back at my notes from the Sugar Bowl in 2023, which was Bryce Young's last college football game that I was on the sideline for, Michael. And that week, Nick Saban told me Bryce Young is brilliant. Bill O'Brien told me he's one of the smartest players he's ever been around. And in the era of social media where people are so quick to jump on somebody and quick to judge, let's also remember that Peyton Manning's rookie season, he had 3 wins and had 28 interceptions, okay? Like, give Bryce Young a break. He's not a bust yet. We don't know. Give it time.
All right, so follow-up to this is offensive player of the year is 20 to 1. Over under touchdown passes, 18.5. Would you play that over or under? And one more. And then regular season passing yards, over 3,150 yards.
So he didn't get to 3,000 last year. I think that he should. Like, he should and he will. I would lean over in that. I would lean over on touchdowns, and I especially lean over on over 4.5 wins. It's juiced at -135 for a reason, and I'm buying more than I'm selling on Carolina that they'll take a positive step in year one under Dave Canales. I just feel maybe I shouldn't. Maybe it's, you know, wrong to have this confidence, but that's how I feel.
Well, that's the value of you being talking to all these people that you do when you're on the road. I mean, Nick's not going to lie to you. Nick told me the same thing about Bryce Young. I mean, he was a Bryce Young supporter, and I think everything you said was 1,000% true. Okay, we heard Roger Goodell yesterday, number two. We heard Roger Goodell's talk every time he talks about player safety. So how in your mind can you equate player safety with adding one more game?
It's mind-boggling. Like, it's getting to the point where this conversation is so played out, it feels egregious. Like, you continue to, in your actions, do things that say you don't care about player safety whatsoever. But you know what? Let's keep adding ticky-tack rules that are impossible to officiate in the name of player safety. Let's get new helmets. Let's keep the Guardian caps at practice. All positive things. But if you really believed in player safety, you wouldn't be in a situation where you're scheduling the way that you are, where you're potentially going to have international games for every single player, even more difficult travel to Australia if you go there. You go from one Thursday night football game to potentially multiple Thursday night games. You go to an 18-game season, which, by the way, the collective bargaining agreement can't even be renegotiated until 2030. If you're planting this seed multiple times, 6 years in advance, this isn't because something's potentially going to get negotiated in the future. It's because it's going to happen. This isn't a question. It's going to happen if you're pushing it like this. But this stood out to me. Warren Sharp tweeted, after not scheduling 3 games in 10 days for any team over the last 5 years, the NFL has scheduled this scenario for 10 teams this year. For context, in all of the games the last decade combined, there were only 2 sequences like that, none in the last 5 years. Push it one further. The NFL has also scheduled 4 games in 17 days for 7 different teams this year. There were none of those instances the last 2 years, and 5 total combined in the last 5 years. Like, These players are not people to you, Roger. They are a money-making machine. More games, more prime time, more expansion, more concessions, bigger TV deals, more money. That is what you care about, and player safety is just over here and an excuse to do what you want to do.
Bingo, and until they come up with a way to do 18 games and not have the players play more plays, I'm all for it. I think 18 games is wonderful. I think player snap counts should be limited to a 16 game. I agree with you. All right, let's continue on the football trend. As you go through your handicapping, I always say quarterbacks and head coach, but you take it a little bit deeper than that. Tell us why.
I think it's really important, especially after what we've seen in terms of quarterback turnover the last 2 years. 66 different starting quarterbacks last year, including a record 6 rookie quarterbacks. 2 years ago, 68 different quarterbacks making starts in the NFL. We're seeing a significant time loss on the field and at the most important position, as well as youth. And that's a position that alters a point spread and alters futures prices more than anything else. And for example, if you're looking at schedules, we talked a lot about the Pittsburgh Steelers this year and how they have the hardest schedule on paper by far. But let's say they enter that brutal stretch the back half of the year and they're getting backup quarterback central. Oh, it's not Jalen Hurts. You have Kenny Pickett. No Lamar Jackson. It's Josh Johnson. Patrick Mahomes, I know, plays through just about everything. But what if you're getting Carson Wentz or Chris Oladokun from South Dakota State? And don't look at me and make me sound crazy here, because it happened. We saw the Browns go through 5 different quarterbacks last year. The Vikings and Jets both had 4. We didn't get the Tommy Cutlets experience in New York because it was fun for everybody. So I would just say, like, as much as we look at quarterbacks and coaches, which are very, very important, in your handicaps of these teams, especially with all the turnover we've seen, you need to take it a layer deeper. You need to look at the backup quarterback room. You need to look at offensive lines. You need to look at who a team is playing and when. Heck, you even have some teams like the Vegas Raiders, who we've talked about a lot this week, that do they even have one starting quarterback? Gardner Minshew is a great, you know, veteran backup, but a backup nonetheless, who your head coach is saying is competing with Aiden O'Connell. So, like, what are you getting there? I just think those are very, very key important things to be aware of while we have time in the offseason to be doing that research.
I could not agree more. We have 2 more, and I want to get through both of them. Okay, the city of Las Vegas recently awarded each ace player $100,000 in endorsement. Now the NBA is investigating. What do you think?
The argument I keep seeing for the investigation is many players on the team are going to double their income and that it's circumventing the cap. From what I understand and what I've read, the ownership group has nothing to do with it, didn't underwrite or broker anything. And the Las Vegas Tourism Authority went directly to each individual's agent and offered this sponsorship. They said, "We love this team. We love what you guys are doing for the city. We want to reward that and invest in you," just like any other sponsorship for any other player. And I love the way that Mark Davis presented this to the world. He said, "Nike is an owner of the WNBA, and they're allowed to sponsor Caitlin Clark for millions on one player, and nobody's complaining or investigating. And I think it's great Nike's doing that. Give credit where it's due to the Las Vegas Authority for stepping up and recognizing these women." You might not like that this team is getting taken care of and already winning championships and becoming a more attractive destination for players to come play, but get over it. Pay your players more if you're embarrassed that something like this is happening and outdoing your salary cap. The WNBA CBA is outdated. It's awful. It's a joke that a lottery pick is getting $76,000 a year. It's just like it was a joke that the Liberty got fined $500,000 for putting their team on a charter a couple of years ago. So I just say, if you're embarrassed of this, fix it, correct it. I understand the revenue share from the NBA is very, very different from the WNBA, but the NBA also owns 50% of the WNBA. So there are things that we can do.
Step up or step out. I agree, Stormy. Real quick, advice on passwords.
Change your passwords. As somebody who went through having credit card issues this week, which I learned about while we were on the air and gave me massive anxiety.
I saw it.
Change your email passwords.
I saw it.
Change your Amex passwords. Change all your stuff. Stay safe out there, everybody. It's not fun for anybody to go through.
Don't use grandkids' names.
Don't do it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, guys, for a limited time, the deal is back, where we're offering our annual VSiN subscription at an unbeatable price, usually $240. Now you can grab a full subscription for just $199. But we're taking it a step further. When you sign up today, we're also giving you an extra 2 months free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access, less than 50 cents a day. But you have to use our promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, and a whole lot more. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro, only $199. But again, use our promo code Lombardi.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts. No doubts. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi. No way or no doubt.
Let's dive right into it, Michael. Roger Goodell, as a part of the NFL owners' meetings, has been making a lot of interesting statements and has been talking for a while about the potential for an 18-game NFL season in the future. Of course, that would mean reducing the number of preseason games, but do with that what you will as it pertains to player safety, which everything that the league does is under that guise, of course. But no way or no doubt, Michael, an 18-game NFL regular season is inevitable in the near future.
No doubt. And it should be there, but it should be with restrictions. It should be with some guidelines for player safety, right? We know quarterbacks can do that if they can last 18 games. But to say that we're replacing a preseason game with a regular season game is an apple to an orange, because most of the guys are in baseball caps that play in the NFL during the preseason, and they're in helmets when they play in a regular season. So it's two different games, and that's going to add more plays. Typically, most NFL games are 70 plays, let's say. And, you know, if you play a 16-game season, X amount of plays times 16 times 70, you come up with a number. Well, if that's the number for 16, that should be the number for 18. Now, it's the coach's job to figure it out. And you say, well, that's too harsh. I mean, that would be too difficult. How do you do that? You know, and it's like, how do we make that work? And, you know, well, it could be 8 plays a game. And when you use those 8 plays, how do you use those plays? See, and you know what would happen if you did that? You'd find players. You'd find out that, okay, we got to get more guys ready to go. We got to play more guys. We might have more guys that are good enough. We have to use our depth. Maybe we dress 53 if we go to 18, as opposed to this ridiculous, we're paying guys full salaries and then leaving 7 guys at home. Like, why can't we dress them? I know we have to give out an injury report. And if we don't give out an injury report, we don't have inactives an hour before the game, it could mess up everything. I get all that. But if you're talking about player safety, dress 53, put a play count limit on positions like offensive and defensive linemen, because that's the most contact that's going to happen all the time, and go from there. And you know what's going to happen? You'll develop more offensive linemen. You'll develop more defensive linemen.
And I hope that when the time comes for the new collective bargaining agreement, that the NFLPA fights for things like that. Because if you really do care about these players, those types of things need to happen. Speaking of players and injuries, Anthony Richardson, the Indianapolis Colts young quarterback, only made it through 5 weeks last season. And he does play the game a little bit differently, a little more physical, a little bit with his legs. He was answering some questions yesterday about changing his style of play.
You know, I don't feel like there's anything wrong with my play style. You know, people see me, I'm a big quarterback, so they always think, oh, he wants to run the ball all the time. He wants to be physical, and that's what's going to get him hurt. When that's not the case, you know, it just happened because we play a dangerous game, and there's nothing I can do about that. But necessarily changing my play, I don't think I want to change it. But, you know, being smart, when knowing when to get extra yards and knowing when to get down, I feel like I know how to do that. It's just, you know, now that I have to do it and do it at the right time, I guess. So I don't think I'm going to change anything, but being smarter for the team, of course.
Loving the hometown support, by the way, with the Pacers jersey on. But no way or no doubt, Anthony Richardson must change his style to avoid injury in his sophomore season.
No way. You can't change who you are. You can't change your style. Part of it, it's a little bit like, okay, let's take Trevor Lawrence, for example. When you go back and watch Trevor Lawrence play at Clemson, one of the things that made him so effective was his feet. He could run with the football, made a lot of plays. He was skinny but could run. When he gets to the NFL, that running ability isn't really good for him because he's so linear. He's tall and thin. And he takes a beating when he runs, and it becomes problematic for him. Richardson's a big man. He's got more, to me, you know, everybody wants to compare Drake May to Josh Allen. Josh Allen comparison really is Anthony Richardson. Big man, hard to tackle, faster than Allen, right? And so he's got to use his feet to help him. Now, I think what he said in there was so damn true. I got to be smart. I got to be smarter. I got to get out of bounds when I see it. Like, I can't fight for every single last yard unless it's a Super Bowl game or a playoff game. Be smarter with the ball in your hands, but don't change what you're doing, because that'll make you less effective, which has made Trevor Lawrence less effective. When he can't run, he's not the same guy.
And Anthony Richardson, Michael, to that point, he needs to be on the football field, because what we talked about a lot going into last season is he doesn't have a lot of experience. Since his first season at Florida in 2020, he has 17 starts. He has 265 completions to his name, right? Like, you look at a guy like Jared Goff, who last year had more than that in a single season. This is his career we're talking about. So this is very, very important, because we saw the dynamic ability that he has when he's available to be available. But you got to stay true to who you are in that same vein. Another mobile quarterback worth talking about, the defending MVP, Lamar Jackson. He was asked about the offseason change and bringing in a new partner in the backfield in Derrick Henry. Oh, I thought we had the sound for that. Just kidding. We do not. But he was talking about how...
just kidding.
Yeah, he was talking about, obviously, how great it is to have a guy like Derrick Henry that he can hand the ball off to. He feels confident in the line that they have in front of him, the type of player he is, the type of defense they have. Was just raving about the way this team can come together. So no way or no doubt, Michael, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry could be the best backfield in the league this year.
No doubt. And here's what's going to make it really effective is the fact that Henry, to be effective, he has to be deep in the eye formation away from the quarterback to let his momentum and that speed build the power that he possesses in that body. It's, you know, the closer to the line of scrimmage he is, or offset in the eye, offset in shotgun, the less effective he is, because if there's penetration, play's going to be over. He's not rerouting himself to go. But when he goes on a straight line and what we call a point of entry back, meaning the point of entry is clean for him to get to, when he has the point of entry clean, oh, good luck trying to tackle this big guy. And 1 yard games become four. And in the fourth quarter, those 1 yard games become 8, 9, 10. Hard to deal with. And the fact that if he's that deep in the eye and Lamar's under center, and I hope they don't use the pistol here, really, I hope they don't do that. But hypothetically, if he's under center and he's the deep in the eye, that play action pass game opens up completely for this team. And I think Baltimore can be a dynamic run team, as they've always been. The other thing you notice too, just to add on to this, is they redid Ronnie Stanley's contract. Ronnie Stanley has never been an offseason program guy. He's always been a little bit of aloof, kind of out on the way. But he's been in camp, and I think this is a make or break year for him.
Big season for the Baltimore Ravens, who are hoping to have a shot at a Super Bowl, no question about it. How about this, Michael? The NFL is moving forward with an optical tracking system for line-to-gain rulings. The system had been tried out in a few stadiums this past year, and we'll get a full preseason trial this summer. No way or no doubt, the NFL needs more technology like this to ensure correct calls.
No question. We should, and we should have it on the goal line. And we should have it, you know, if that ball goes out of the end zone and we're dealing with that, where did it cross? How did we get there? Yeah, I definitely think that needs to be as much as we possibly can to take it out of Scott Novak's hands. This should always be the Scott Novak rule, you know, and then we don't have to deal with, I mean, one of the legacies of the great John Madden left us, is that a right foot spot or a left foot spot? We all look for it now, right? Oh, he got a left foot spot. That's pretty good coming in from the closest to the camera sideline. Bo, he got a right foot spot. That's a great spot over there. Now it's over with. No more right and left foot spot. Here's where the chip tells us where to go. Look, if we could put a man on the goddamn moon, right? And if we can hit a house in some remote location in Pakistan, we can probably figure out how to do the chains.
If we can put a man on the moon, why are we using an index card on a football field? 100%. One thing I do want to just clarify, because I know there have been a lot of people that are like, finally, the chain gang is eliminated. We're not going to have that anymore. I think it's great that we're not going to have the show of the chain gang running out there anymore, and the way that things are getting measured. They're still going to be there for safety. We still need markers to know where the line of scrimmage is and where the line to gain. Like, you're still going to have that for the quarterbacks and players to have that awareness. It'll be a backup if the technology doesn't work. But This will make the game go quicker. This will make the game more efficient. And I can't wait to see how it comes visually in the preseason. I know in the UFL, the league that I cover with ESPN and ABC, they use that visual spatial technology for first downs. So we'll see how it looks in the NFL. We'll be right back.